Good afternoon. Today is the second episode of the Sean Mo Hoops podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening to the first one and tuning in to this one. We have an esteemed basketball guest today, Dante Calabria, who many people will remember from his UNC Chapel Hill days. Not only was he a national championship winner, but still holds the UNC single season three-point percentage record. After Chapel Hill, he played internationally at some of the most competitive levels and is now the head coach at Kaiser University. So, Dante, how's everything going?
All is going well. Thank you, Sean.
Well, it's good to have you. And I know you've had quite the basketball journey from playing to now coaching. So definitely want to kind of learn about your experiences. But, you know, one thing, this past summer, I was out in Vegas watching some of the high school AAU tournaments and saw some of the former coaches. And a story kind of popped in my mind when we first met. You were playing internationally overseas, and there was kind of a young American that was playing on the opposite team. And, I just remember one of the stories you told me about that experience, and it gave me a good laugh. And I just wanted to kind of, kick it off with that story and then kind of go into your playing career.
Yes, I was an older guy, and, some of the younger guys that were coming out didn't know me, didn't recognize or anything like that coming over to Europe. And so it was the fourth game of the season, and we're playing against a rookie from a Big Five conference school that was really shooting the ball well and scoring. In fact, it was leading the league in scoring that year. And my old age, I was matched up against him on the defensive side. And so first play of the game, I told my coach, I said, hey, let me run this play for me. Let me try to get a foul on this guy. And, overzealous rookie, and I'm getting ready to use a screen. I just stop and let him run me over and flop. And, referee, obviously, I've been playing in Europe for a long time, calls the foul. I get the call. He gets a little upset talking about flopping this, flopping that, but I don't answer. I don't think he realized I spoke English. A couple of plays later, about another minute, whatever goes by, I'm down on the baseline again, and I start to make a move, and he comes up real tight on me, so I put my arm under his arm and then start running and flail my arms up, and all of a sudden he gets a second foul, and then he's pretty heated. And, he starts swearing in English a little bit, and I just walk over to him, and I said, hey, man, you're going to have the best seat in the house for the rest of the half, and you only have to pay for the ticket. And kind of set him off a little bit, and he ended up coming back in the second half. He had 7 points. I think it was low for the year. We ended up beating him pretty badly, but it was kind of a funny story. The young guy that, you never know who you're going to run into. And here I am, an American guy, but with an Italian name, playing as an Italian in the Italian Championship League. And this guy has no clue coming over there. So it was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, I remember you told me that when we first met, and that still kind of cracks me up about playing overseas. But kind of jumping back, we're going way back into the early 90s. Grew up in Pennsylvania outside of Pittsburgh, and you had quite the high school career playing for a legendary coach, winning a state championship. But in terms of when you were growing up, Chippewa Falls, went to Blackhawk High. Was it a basketball town? Was it kind of like what you see in the movies with Hoosiers, or what was the basketball culture when you were kind of growing up out there?
Well, I was very fortunate to have Coach John Miller as my coach. He grabbed me as a young kid, and in the summer times I would either walk or ride my bike or somehow get to the outdoor courts in the morning, sometimes 6:37 in the morning, 3, 4, 5 days a week. And he would really work with me, and it was open to any other kid, so sometimes there'd be other kids there, others not. And at this time, Sean Miller was a little older than me, so I got to work alongside with him. And then Ryan Miller was younger than me, so the older I got, Ryan was the young guy coming around. So basketball for us in that was really a year-round thing. For my era, we had about six or seven guys that only played hoops, and we would go play all over the place together. You know, it's a predominantly a football area, but right where I was at, you know, basketball was number one for us. And it was great to have the coaching and the leadership that Coach Miller did for us as kids all the way up through graduating in high school, to have him available and him willing to do what he did, and doing the drills, doing the practice, getting in the gym, working was such a bonus for us.
When you kind of first started playing with him, was this kind of your middle school years, or what point in time, you know, were you kind of turning into that gym rat, you know, that later served you well down the road?
It was actually earlier than that. I was a young kid, but I can remember, funny story, but I can remember playing football. I was playing football on the eighth grade team. I think it was eighth grade. Might have been ninth grade. But I can remember being on football and then going to practice and finishing practice outside and then going into the locker room downstairs and changing and coming up to play basketball because we had open gym. And I just remember the coaches of the football team were so mad at me because I was going to play open gym. And they're like, "Hey, this is football season. You can't play basketball." And I said, "What do you mean I can't play basketball?" And they're saying, "Well, it's football season. You know, you just finished football practice." I said, "Did I practice football?" And they're like, "Yeah, we finished." I said, "Okay, now I'm on my own. I'm going to play basketball." "Well, you can't do that." And they said, "You're not going to be on the team if you do that." And I said, I walked down, grabbed my helmet, my shoulder. I said, "Okay, here you go. If you don't want me to play, that's fine." And, you know, they changed their mind, but that was my thought process. I just wanted to be in the gym playing hoops.
Well, in terms of kind of being in the gym, you know, I was able to kind of go back and read up on your high school team. Your senior year, you win the state championship, but, you know, when I was reading it, it kind of sounded like you guys were way ahead of your time in terms of style of play. You guys averaged over 90 points a game, shot and made a lot of three-pointers. So initially I kind of thought of, you know, the Warriors, you know, with the pace and space era today, but also was reading how you guys basically ran a full court, you know, trapping press as well. You know, what was it like playing that style back then, and especially in Pennsylvania? Kind of take me back through that senior season where you guys won, you know, 30-plus games in a row and won that state championship.
Yeah, it started as a sophomore. I played varsity as a sophomore, started all the games with the older guys. Most of those guys were seniors. And it wasn't an up-tempo team, but hard-nosed guys, really tough defenders. Then my junior year, we had three guys, myself and two other guys, that could really shoot the basketball. And then there were a couple guys that came off the bench that you know, their attribute to the team was their ability to shoot. And so we had a big advantage because the machine that's out right now called the gun, the guy who basically invented the gun was from Youngstown, Ohio. And he and Coach Miller were pretty good friends. And so we were kind of the guinea pigs for his machine. And
okay.
So back in 1988, 89, 90, we were using that machine. And what he would do was bring the machine to us, and we would shoot, you know, 200,000, 300,000, 500,000 shots on the machine. And then he would bring us another one and take that one back and see where he could improve the machine and what he could do to make it better. And so that was what we did. And we just continually got up shots during study hall. Coach would write guys passes, and we would come down and he would have the machine set up, and we would just shoot 45 minutes. And so we became a really good shooting team. And we also had really tough, hard-nosed guys that defended. And
right.
Coach was like, "We're going to play full court. We're going to press, and we're just going to run. And we're going to run secondary break, and we're going to shoot the ball. Because when that ball moves, if you have a shot, you shoot it." And those are the shots that we were always taking in practice. So it really flowed right into the way he wanted to play. And fast forward to my senior season, we were on track at that time to make more threes than any team in the history since the three-point line was established for high schools. And the only thing that stopped us is that teams just started playing zones but they would play a 3-2 zone with their defender outside the 3-point line. And so we would just start driving to the hoop and scoring. And, you know, we still won by large amounts of points, but we just didn't make as many threes. And so
right.
I think we finished third at that year. We were the third most ever. That was how we played. We pressured you full court. We pretty much pestered you every play. And then when we got the ball, whether you made it or missed it, we stealed it. We turned around and ran down the other end, and we're looking to shoot three.
I mean, you know, right now I'm just kind of thinking, you know, 2 years ago, Chino Hills with the Ball Brothers, they were the top high school team kind of going undefeated. And it sounds like they had, you know, I got to watch them play a few times, and they had, you know, shooting threes from all over the court, but definitely not as sound defensively as it sounds you guys were. You know, if your team were playing today in kind of the social media world of, you know, Twitter and Instagram, you know, do you think you guys would have kind of captured America with kind of your playing style and what you guys like to do?
You know, we could have. But at the same time, token, if that was the case, I think it would have been more difficult, because I think teams would have been able to prepare a little bit differently,
right,
and try to take
yep.
that away. So that could have worked in both ways there. I mean, it could have been that we got publicity for it, but it also could have been that it became more difficult. So I don't know, however you want to spin that. It's, you know, we definitely, if we were doing what we did then today, it definitely would have been out there. But again,
right.
at the same time, it might have been more difficult for us to maintain and to continue at that pace and that level.
No, that definitely makes sense. Now, in terms of kind of you, obviously, you know, well-known player in the state player of the year as a senior, and I think you shot something ridiculous like 60% as a junior. So obviously, you're starting to kind of, you know, get recruiting attention. So when did colleges first start kind of recruiting you and kind of considering you a high major Division I player?
It really started going into my sophomore year.
Okay.
I was on an AAU team, and we went to San Antonio. And I just had a ridiculously successful 7 or 8 day period where I could not miss. I mean, I can remember one play where the ball was going out of bounds, and if you remember the old hash mark that they used to have for the 5 second calls.
Yep.
On the court. Are you too young for that?
No, I remember that.
Yeah. So, the ball was going out right about that point, and I'm going, and my body's facing the scores table. And I just planted my left foot, turned while I was in the air, grabbed the ball, turned and threw it back to the rim. And it just went right in. And that was the kind of week that I had. I mean, I was averaging about 45 points a game, just couldn't miss. And that's when I first started getting a lot of interest. And
okay.
the funny part about that is that's Coach Phil Ford was there. And he'll tell a funny story that right after that tournament, he called Coach Smith and said, "I found one guy that we have to have." And so they started recruiting me really hard, and they were really one of the first ones.
No, I didn't know that about Phil Ford. So they're recruiting you. You know, what were some of the other schools recruiting you? I mean, you were kind of going on your official visits. You know, what were the primary schools you were kind of considering back then?
The final five that I had were, ironically, Villanova, where Coach
right.
Massimino was, Carolina,
yep.
University of Pittsburgh. Coach John McLeod had just taken over at Notre Dame, and he started recruiting me pretty heavily, and I was interested in going there, but they kind of got in so late that it was really tough. You know, it wasn't – I just kind of – I liked it, but it wasn't one of my finals. And then Florida State was another one. And then the University of Iowa also was very high on my list because that's where my father played.
Okay, okay. So when you're taking the official visits, are you kind of, you know, say Saturday morning, are you kind of going up against the current team members, or what was kind of a normal official visit for you like?
Yeah, back then you weren't, like, I never played on my visit, never, ever played. Now I guess they always play, the kids always play against the current players. Like, for example, when I bring somebody down here to Kaiser, you know, we'll let them practice with us. or run up and down with us for sure, so we can see how they mesh with the guys. But back then it wasn't like that. I never played. It was more like you got there on a Friday. Usually on Friday night you had dinner with the coach, the head coach, maybe at his house or at a nice restaurant. Saturday you went in to meet all the different people within the school system, admission. You had interviews with some of the different. My area was business administration. I wanted to go into business school, so I always met with the people from business school, a professor or the dean of business school, just kind of understand what it was going to be and whatnot. And usually it was over a football game, and you went to the football game with the current players, and you maybe went to the gym and did some shooting or whatever with one or two guys, but never played pickup. And then, go to dinner with your host, whoever the guy was, or two guys on the team that took you around, went around campus, hung out a little bit, got up Sunday morning, had breakfast with the coaching staff, and Sunday afternoon you were on a plane back to your house.
Okay, so when you took your official visit to UNC, who were you staying with, and what do you kind of remember about that? Did you kind of know at that point that UNC was where you wanted to go, or what was the process in terms of you choosing Chapel Hill?
Well, we had actually a few guys that took me around. One day was group of two, and then on Saturday was another group of two when I went to Carolina. And when I left Carolina, I mean, I knew Carolina was definitely going to be the favorite, just because of the history, the mystique. Coach Smith at that time, I mean, if Coach Smith wanted you, you jumped to get there. there was no doubt about it. But I also had Villanova with Coach Mast, who I built a very good relationship with. And then also the assistant coach at Iowa named Gary Close, who I still speak with today. He and I became very close during the recruiting process. And one of the hardest things I ever had to do was tell him that I wasn't coming. He was basically at my school, or it seemed like once a week. And one of the hardest things for me to do was tell him I wasn't coming. And that was difficult, but it basically came down to Iowa, Villanova, and UNC. And obviously I went to UNC. Anytime you had the opportunity to go there at that period of time, UNC was the top, if not one of the top three schools. You had Coach Smith, the tradition. Turned out it's a no-brainer. And, I'm very happy with that decision that I made. So I will never turn back.
So once Coach Ford saw you play and he talked to Coach Smith, what was their recruiting pitch to you? And what do you kind of remember of that point in time when they're whether watching you play in the gym or writing you letters or talking to you on the phone? But what was their message to you as kind of a high school star at that point in time?
Well, what's neat about them is it's not like they don't promise you. I mean, Coach Smith came in my house and was like, "Hey, if you earn a playing time, you'll play. If you don't earn playing time, you won't play." So many times coaches will come in and say, "Oh, you'll start here, this is that." And one of the big things I learned, and now getting into the coaching business, is I try to be as open as possible with anybody. If a kid asks me a question, I want to tell them the truth. And sometimes it backfires on you because a kid won't come or whatnot. But other times, most of the times, it's good, and the kid is appreciative of someone being honest with them and telling them what it's about. And Coach Smith was like that. If you deserve to play, you were going to play. And that was how he worked. And I appreciated that much, and I still do that today because of him.
And I mean, that's something you kind of continue to hear with Roy Williams and kind of his recruiting. Not promising starting spots or anything like that. So that definitely sounds familiar. But so you get to Chapel Hill, and you're joining. A lot of the main guys are at that point in time juniors and seniors. So you have Eric Montross, you have Derek Phelps, Brian Reese, George Lynch, et cetera. How was the adjustment for you going from, playing in Pennsylvania to all of a sudden, obviously that year you guys won the championship team, or you guys were a championship team. How was the adjustment process for you just going from high school to playing at Carolina?
Well, fortunately, we ran a lot of the in high school. We ran a lot of the things that Carolina runs, the secondary break. So I had an advantage going in already knowing or being familiar with a lot of the things they were doing. But fortunately for me, guys like Derek Phelps, Ryan Reese, Donald Williams kind of took me under their wing a little bit and really helped me to adjust, especially the playing time. George Lynch was another guy, Pat Sullivan, because I was coming from a situation where I basically came off the court when I wanted to, and now I was getting on the court, for minimal amounts of time, at periods of time. I ended up playing about 10 minutes a game, 11 minutes a game as a freshman, which for me was next to nothing. And it's a difficult thing to do, but thanks to those guys, they were able to help me get through all that and stay positive and stay confident. And but being honest with you, it's not an easy adjustment,
Right.
especially when you're accustomed to playing. But back in those days, I think having those older guys, the leadership that they were able to show, the messages and the information and things that they were able to talk to you about and how they went through the same process, those things help. It'll help everybody. And it's unfortunate that in today's, how do you want to say it? Today's idea of
One and
college
done.
basketball, where it's one and done, two and done.
Yep.
You don't have that, and so I think that's one of the reasons why there's 600, 700, 800 transfers every year.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to talk to you about the one and done culture, but kind of just sticking on your freshman year, you said you're playing 10 minutes a game off the bench, so something you're getting used to, but that year you guys, make that run. You beat Michigan in the Fab Five in the championship game in New Orleans. How was that experience for you? Obviously, it's so rare to, for a player to experience the highs of winning a championship, but how was it kind of in the moment at the Final Four, but also kind of after the game, whether it's the hotel or even Bourbon Street? How was that experience for somebody that's just 18 years old at the time?
It's uncanny that you go from a high school championship to a national championship back to back.
Right.
The feeling was unbelievable. I mean, I'm thinking like, damn, this is easy. We can do this three more times. Even though it wasn't easy. I mean, I say that it definitely wasn't easy, but you kind of raise your own expectations. But to be able to be part of that group, we just celebrated our reunion the other day, say maybe 2 weekends. I can't remember the exact date it was. It was during the Carolina Duke football game. And
Okay.
every single player, every single manager, returned the whole staff, with the exception, obviously, of Coach Smith, Coach Guthridge, but the secretaries, everybody returned. And even Coach Smith's family was able to join us for our reunion. And it was just an unbelievable moment, something I'll never forget. And to have everybody that attended, I mean, that's how tight-knit and close that team was. And just to be able to be around all those guys again, and the memories that we shared, and the times, it was an awesome thing. But that's what it's about at Carolina. It's a family atmosphere. It's a team. You're an individual, but you're part of the team. And Coach Smith used to talk about that all the time. And we all have now, out of that group of guys that played, 9 of us are now coaches. And we
Right.
all carry on what Coach Smith taught us and what Coach Guthridge taught us, Coach Ford, Coach Will, Coach Hanners, that were all there at that time. All the things that those guys taught us, we're trying now to pass along to other kids and these guys coming through now who don't really get to see that. We were fortunate because that's what we got to see every day. In the culture today, it's not the same. It's not like that. So, we're able to reach a small amount of kids and try to make them understand this is what it was like. This is what it was about.
Yep.
So To a T, to a man, each one of those guys do that. And that's the impact that was made at Carolina by the coaching staff and by the secretaries and all those things.
Well, in terms of what the coaching staff instilled in you guys, jump into your sophomore year, you guys get two of the top players in the country and Rasheed Wallace and Jerry Stackhouse coming in. You know, I feel like today, you know, you're not going to have the juniors and seniors that you guys had on the team. And, you know, Jerry and Rasheed are going to come in with kind of the one and done mentality, and they're going to be the guys, you know, from the get go. But obviously, you guys were coming off of a championship. You had a lot of returning starters and players. That was it difficult for Coach Smith or for the older guys to kind of accept, you know, Jerry and Rasheed, or how was it just from kind of a chemistry standpoint, bringing in, you know, two obviously really talented players?
And that's a difficult question because when you say accept, I don't think it was difficult to accept. Both those guys were competitive. Both those guys worked their butts off. Both those guys wanted to win, and both those guys wanted to play. I don't think it was hard to accept either one. And I think if you ask anybody on that team, both those guys were great guys. And
Yep.
the difficult part was you still only had 40 minutes to play. And
Right.
so it was difficult to find time for everybody to keep everybody satisfied. And I would venture a guess that that was one of Coach Smith's top three toughest years of distributing playing time because, I mean, when you really think about it, you had at point guard, you had Jeff McGinnis and Derek Phelps. Okay. At shooting guard, you had myself and Donald Williams. At the small
Yep.
forward, you had Brian Reese and Jerry Stackhouse. At the power forward, you had Kevin Salvadori, Rasheed Wallace. And then you had Eric Montrose at the five along with Rasheed. Kevin could play the five. Serge Wicker was there playing the five. And I know I'm leaving out some guys from that team. That team was unbelievable. We had a guy named Larry Davis who really never got in the game. And he averaged 44 in high school and was an unbelievable player.
Yep.
And
I
didn't
mean,
get in the game.
I'm looking right now, and you know, there was nine guys that averaged above 5 points. You know, three guys in double figures. You know, two or three averaging above 8 points. Obviously, a very deep and talented team.
And it was a difficult year, I'm sure, for Coach, because you know at that age, everybody we all want to play. We all worked our butts off, and we all practiced. Our practice. It's funny to say this, but our practices were more intense sometimes than the games. And but it was a great atmosphere, and you know that team probably should have been one of the top five teams in the history of the NCAA basketball. But the difficult part was finding space for everybody, and
Right.
that's what made it difficult. And if we could have meshed a little better on the court, we could have been devastating. But it's one of those things that it's not easy, and you won't see that happen today because, again, you said it. You're not going to have the upperclassmen and the freshmen on the same team, really. But man, I think of that team right there. Those practices were phenomenal. I used to love going to the gym for those practices because you knew every day you were going to have 12, 13 guys that were going to bring all kind of energy because we all wanted to play.
Yep. So who are you usually matched up with in practice?
I used to go against Donald a lot. Donald and I played the same spot, so we always played. But you know, Derek would slide down, and I would also slide down to the point guard. As a freshman at Carolina, I played point. I backed up Derek, so I got to go against Derek all the time. Derek was one of the best defensive point guards that you can, you know, think about in a college setting. He was phenomenal, and I learned more in that year going against him that when I became a pro and I was playing in Europe, playing at the EuroLeague level. I mean, a lot of times I was point guard on the team, and up to that
Okay.
point, I really had not played point guard. But I attribute that all to him because he made me work so hard. Because if I wasn't 100% concentrated against him, he was going to do something to make me have a turnover or something like that. So he pushed me unbelievably. But you know, I'd go against Jeff sometimes at the point, Brian Reese sometimes at the three. But you know, whoever you were going against, man, for real, was going to give it 100%. I mean, we were going at each other, and it was great. One of the greatest years I can remember as far as talent, intensity, and everything like that on the court. It just for some reason we could never get over that hump to be just that elite team.
I mean, obviously in NCAA tournament, it's not like the NBA finals where you're allowed, you know, one game to screw up and you have the best out of five or best out of seven. And it's just kind of, you know, the one and done. And, you know, a lot of the great teams often don't win the championships.
Yeah. And no disrespect to Boston College, because they had a really strong team that year also. But if we play them 10 times, I mean, we're going to beat them 9. And
yep.
They just, the one day that they were going to beat us, and they played extremely well. And, you know, they got the W, and they earned it.
After that game, obviously, it kind of goes into the summer. I'm sure it gives you guys extra motivation. You're kind of moving in into more of a leadership role as a junior. Jerry and Rashid are back with McGinnis. But as a junior, you go into that full-time starting role, and you're playing 30 minutes a game. How is that kind of adjustment for you, just going from a key bench player to kind of a key player in the starting lineup?
Well, I had done a lot of starting, and I played a lot of minutes as a sophomore.
Yep.
Because Donald got hurt.
Okay.
And so I was really the lone quote-unquote shooter that was playing. And so there were games I was playing 38, 36 minutes. So I got the taste of it. As a sophomore, I probably started half the games, if not a couple more, because Donald was hurt for a while, if I remember correctly. And so coming into the junior year, we didn't get a couple of kids that we thought we were going to get, because when you have guys like Jerry and Rashid coming back, you know, kids just didn't want to come to school there because they knew they weren't going to play. They were going to have to sit.
Yep.
And so once we get started, I mean, we were going with 5, 6, 7 deep, and we were all playing a lot of minutes. But it was good, because I think the chemistry on that team that year was pretty good. We knew we had a beast in Rashid on the inside, so we could really pressure the ball on the outside. You know, and I always like to joke around saying, like, you know, guys would be like, I'm going to blow by you. I'm like, good, because I'm going to introduce you to my friend. His name's Rashid. He's down there. He's going to block your shot. You know, stuff like that. And the intensity that Jerry played with was great. And, you know, Jeff came along that year and really established himself as a top player in the ACC at the point guard position. And then Donald was back. And so with Donald back, he and I made, like, we basically played with 2 shooting guards, but I pushed down to the small forward on defense. So I was guarding, you know, bigger and stronger guys. But, you know, being a little bit crafty, I was able to do a few things here and there to maneuver and not make it such a mismatch. So,
you know, that year, you know, you look in the record books, I think it was 49.6% you shot from 3, which is still tops in the UNC record books for a 3-point percentage. I mean, going through that year, did the basket just kind of look like an ocean to you? You know, how was that year for you, obviously, shooting-wise?
Well, it also has a lot to do with the guys you're playing with.
Right.
So you have Rashid, Jerry,
kinda
Jeff, and Dalton.
Open looks.
So every once in a while, teams would defend me, and they would face guard me. Like, I can remember Duke always face guarding me and not allowing me to touch the ball. And Jerry Rashid would get 45 on, 50 points on. And other teams would try to take away Rashid and help on the lobs, and that left me open on the backside, and that's games I had. So the chemistry that we had on that team and the versatility was great. I mean, there were times when Rashid would go out, and coach would put Jerry down at the 5 spot. Jerry was 6'5", 6'6", and I would play the 4, and I'm 6'5". And we would just play like nothing changed. And that team was a fun team to play with.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know one game you hit 8 3-pointers, which still stands as a record. So obviously a great kind of, you know, shooting performance by you. And then, you know, kind of going into your your senior year, it kind of seemed like you went from, obviously kept your shooting ability, but I think you averaged around 4 assists and kind of tapped into more of that playmaking ability you developed. You know, how was it your last year in school, and you're kind of being asked to take on a bigger role in terms of on the court?
Well, anytime you lose, again, Jerry Rashid go to the NBA draft, you know, high selections, and we bring in a guy like Vince Carter, a guy like Ademola Okulaja, a guy like Antoine Jameson, who all have huge impacts as freshmen, but they're still not Jerry Rashid as juniors.
Right.
You know, and basically our team coming back was Jeff McGinnis and I as the only experienced players. So obviously teams were really geared up to stop us on the outside. So that opened up a lot more availability for those other guys, and they came through and had great seasons. And I mean, at one point we were 7-1 in the ACC, and I can remember reading I don't know if it was Street and Smith or something back in that day about how if you want to get Carolina, this is the year to get them. And then boom, we pop out 7-1 in the ACC. Now we hit a wall. That again, too, was a fun team because we were so young, and, you know, myself and Jeff had pretty good influences and big influences on those younger guys as far as working hard and doing it just the way Coach Smith wanted to do it. And I mean, you can see how well Antoine played that season. And then Vince grew and just became an unbelievable player as an NBA player. And both those guys had great careers. Ademola Okulaja had a great career over in Europe. Shamal Williams was part of that team, who developed himself and became a big-time force at Carolina and also had a great pro career. Those guys were fun to play with, too.
You were kind of in a unique role in terms of coming in as a freshman and playing with a lot of the talented juniors and seniors, but then also being that kind of bridge between, you know, getting to play with Jerry and Rashid, but then, you know, at the end as a senior, getting to play with a young Vince and Jameson. You know, looking back on it, who was kind of the, if you had to name one player that was the best player, whether it was kind of in practice or just talent-wise, you know, on those different teams that you played on, is there anybody that you can say was the top, or were there just kind of so many talented guys that it would be too difficult?
Well, no, the talent, there's no doubt there was talented guys, but I mean, I would tell you that Rashid Wallace was by far he could do so many things, man, and incredible intensity on the court. You always knew Rashid was going to be there and had your back on any situation. I mean, he's a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal talent. And I think he stood out. I mean, you still have guys. Jerry Stackhouse was a great competitor. Eric Montross was an unbelievable college player. Just demanded every time he touched the ball, double team. George Lynch, one of the best guys ever I played with. I mean, he was all over the court, offensively and defensively, servicing for the team. He was an unbelievable leader to have as a freshman for me to look up to and to work with and to play with. Derek Phelps is another guy, but I mean, Rashid was kind of in a place of his own.
Okay. Well, I mean, in terms of Rashid, are there any, you know, that obviously with his personality, are there any kind of funny stories with him that jumped to mind, whether it was kind of playing or off the court, that you kind of remember from his few years in Chapel Hill?
You know, he was so intense on the court, but I think he's how you want to say it, misrepresented in the media, because yeah, he gets fired up on the court, he gets technicals here and there, but that's because of the intensity level. And a lot of times I have to defend him. A lot of times the calls that were made or things that were blown were probably questionable at best. And he was just such an intense guy that the reaction wasn't probably what you want, but you learn to deal with it because he brought that same intensity on every play. And off the court, just a great dude, just a great guy. I couldn't say a negative thing about him.
Okay. Well, you know, when you guys are in Chapel Hill, where are you guys going on Franklin Street, or what were some of your favorite spots off the court to go to?
I used to go to Four Corners a lot. The guy that owned it at that time was an Ohio guy, so he and I got along pretty well just because we're both from the same area. He's Not Here was always a favorite. He's Not Here is a beer pub. It's outdoors. It's always a neat little place, but there were a couple good restaurants there.
Pretty much any UNC alumni bar you go to, you know, they'll have the He's Not Here cups, which obviously everybody loves and reminds them of Chapel Hill. In terms of, got to ask you about the UNC Duke, obviously the best, I'd say the best rivalry, I'm probably biased, but the best rivalry in sports. And, you know, I know you, I think you lost your first game to them, but I think ended up winning the rest of your games in your career. But how was that UNC Duke, you know, rivalry and experience playing, you know, playing at Cameron and just kind of going against those guys?
Well, it was good. And, you know, I used to go play against them in the summer a lot over at Card, and some of those guys would come over to Chapel Hill and play in the summers. But during my era, it was good. They struggled a little bit. One year, the year that Coach Krzyzewski was out with a back injury, you know, they struggled a little bit. But they had guys that competed. Every time we played them, it was it didn't matter what the records were. It was going to be a tough game. You know, you hear people say a war, but I mean, I don't want to say that because it really doesn't qualify as that, but it was a battle. It was tough, and they came to play and we came to play. And I mean, we had that one game double overtime, and that was the year they won two league games.
Right.
So I mean, it's it was definitely a battle. And but usually different eras again are different have different stories, but for the most part those guys were good guys. And We got along pretty well on both sides, and it just when you played, you played to win the game, and you played hard against each other. But there's guys from that era that I'm friends with today, still talk to today, those were good battles. And as far as playing at Cameron, and them coming over to Chapel Hill, I mean, it was always a fun. You know, those are games you always look forward to. Then biggest quote-unquote rivalry, and ESPN was always carrying the game, and they had rivalry week, and we were the focal point of rivalry week. And you know, those are games that you didn't need a lot of energy or anything because it was already there. If you couldn't get up for that game, you might as well go back to sleep. There's not much right. You're gonna be able to do. So again, I mean, talking about those two teams, I mean, that's like it's almost natural. So close to universities, it's just almost natural that game's going to be a battle every time. At the time, when you have a guy like Coach Krzyzewski, who is not the Coach Krzyzewski that he is today, he was still up and coming, still very, very respected, and you have Coach Smith going at each other, that even adds to it. And then you have Coach Krzyzewski now, who's one of the elite coaches, and you have Coach Williams, who was also one of the elite coaches. So the rivalry just kept the same and kept building and kept building. It's at a point now where when Duke Carolina plays, I mean, you make time to watch the game.
Dante, in terms of kind of Roy Williams, you know, when you guys are watching UNC play, you know, play now, you know, how similar are kind of the offensive sets or the scheme, you know, from when you are playing, or are there a lot of similarities, you know, when you're watching Carolina play now?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, and I'm actually facing that now with following a legend at Kaiser in Coach Rolly Massimino. Coach Mass did things his way, and you know, I do my best to try to keep a lot of the things that he did here at Kaiser, but at the same time, I've had so many other influences in my coaching, in my playing days from coaches, that my coaching style is not 100% like Coach Mass. I have a bunch of different things. Coach Smith plays a big part in that. And so even though I try to keep a lot of things of Coach Mass, I have to put my own style in also. And Coach Williams, even though he's a Coach Smith disciple, he has his own way. And so even though we try and he tries to continue so many things, especially with the Carolina family and everyone together, he has to input his own style also. So a lot of it is different. Some of it is the same, is similar. Some of it's the same. But, you know, you have to kind of move on and accept that Coach Williams is not Coach Smith. He's not going to do everything that Coach Smith did. Coach Williams is Coach Williams. And Coach Williams has his own style. Coach Williams has won a heck of a lot of basketball games coaching his style. And so it would not be correct for all of us to say, hey, well, he has to do it the way Coach Smith did it. Coach Smith did it his way, and he was successful. Coach Williams does it his way, and he's successful. So there are similarities, but there are differences. And in any situation, that's kind of what's going to happen.
Well, in terms of kind of obviously your coaching career, so you played overseas at some of the highest levels, and then you came back to the U.S. and you were at UNC Wilmington for a little bit, and then got to coach at Montverde's prep school, and now you're kind of the head coach, and obviously you've had a lot of influences, from high school to college to overseas, and even Coach Massimino, but I guess two questions. What would you say your style of play is right now? And two, how did the Kaiser opportunity come about for you?
Well, we'll start with the Kaiser opportunity. Last year, I kind of got out of coaching and got into training. And just to kind of take a break and take a look from the outside and see what was available, this and that. And during that time, obviously, I went to not all the games, but a lot of the games that Kaiser played. And, you know, I stayed close with Coach Mass because Coach Mass was an important part for me. I was on staff with him two years ago, and we went 30-5 and made it to the Final Eight of the NAI Division II tournament over in Branson, Missouri. And I was also trying to get a job coaching in Europe. I wanted to go back to Europe and coach in the Italian League, Spanish League, wherever I could get a job. Well, it just so happened that some of the options that I had, the clubs were not the most solid clubs, and I had already taken one chance going to Europe and coaching in the third division of Italy, and the club just basically imploded financially, and I didn't want to get involved with that again. So I kept in contact with Coach Mass all summer, and it just so happened that a couple of the guys that were on staff here at Kaiser decided they were going to do something different. And so Coach Mass asked me to come back. He said, hey, you know, I need some help this year. Would you be willing to come back? And I ended up telling him, yeah, I'd love to come back. By the time all that transpired, by the time I got down here, Coach Mass had already entered the hospital. He wasn't feeling well. And a little over, you know, 8-10 days, I don't know how long it was, he passed away. And so we didn't know what was going on here, what the administration wanted to do. And they approached me about taking over as an interim head coach. And, I jumped on that opportunity. Number one, it's a great opportunity to coach at the college level. And number two, to follow Coach Mass and try to continue what he started. I jumped at that opportunity, and so that's where we're at right now. That's how I'm here.
Okay. Well, how is it, you know, in terms of recruiting? Obviously, you went through the recruiting experience yourself. You got to do it at UNC Wilmington, but you know, when you're out on the road, you know, what type of player, you know, are you looking for? Whether it's a system or, you know, what you're, you know, when you're watching games, how, you know, what type of player are you trying to recruit?
Well, I need a player that has a lot of basketball savvy, that has intelligence on the court. And I say that because a lot of the stuff that I like to run and I try to do is basically reading the game, reading what the defense is doing. And so my style, I took a lot of it from some of the European coaches I had, is basically whatever the defense wants to try to take away from you, there's a counter that we already have installed into the philosophy. And so that's, I need guys that can read the situation. Now at this level that I'm at right now, you know, I can't just go after players. I've got to kind of wait. I got to go and see guys that I like and guys that I'm interested in and keep in contact with them. But we're kind of like the last or next to last group to really get players to commit to us. Everybody wants to go D1, then they want to go D2, then they want to go D3, and then there's the NAI. And so mm-hmm. you're on a holding pattern. And then the other way to recruit, fortunately for me, with so many guys from UNC that are in the coaching ranks, you know, you'll get an email or a phone call or text message and say, hey, I think this guy's transfer. You might want to take a look at him. He you know, you might like him. And so you also can find some D1 transfers, D2 transfers that maybe just didn't have a great experience where they're at, and they're transferring, and you might have a shot to get those guys too. So,
okay. Well, I mean, I still remember just going back when we first met, 2012 National Prep Showcase out in Albertus Magnus in Connecticut, and I remember watching a game, and there was a 4-star wing, kind of top 10 wing in the country, and then a 2-star wing that had been overlooked, didn't get any really D1 offers out of school, and was basically in prep school to try to garner any offers. And I remember you kind of telling me, you know, out of those two, I'd rather have the 2-star, which, you know, I thought was interesting at the time, and definitely was, you know, in terms of seeing how those players' careers developed, you know, I think the 2-star player, just probably based on the intelligence and smarts that he had and you kind of picked up just watching, had kind of the overall better college career. So that's kind of one thing that, you know, from when we first met that I've always remembered and always just thought was really interesting of kind of your ability to see through that really quickly.
Well, one of the things is I'm not afraid. I've never been afraid in my life to make decisions or if I believe something, I believe it. And one of the things is for me is I don't need somebody else to tell me that this guy can play or this guy can't play. And I make mistakes just like anybody else. But at the same time, I kind of have an idea of what the way I want to play. And there's some exceptionally great players that really, as a coach, that really could not fit into what I want to do, even though they're phenomenal players. And then there are guys that, like you just said, that might get overlooked or get rated at a low level that, with me, might flourish. Mm-hmm. And again, that plays in so much with who your coach is, how you play, what you want to do. And that's the tough part for these kids, is to pick the right school or try to pick the right school when you don't really have the opportunity to get to know the coaches and get to know the system that they're running. So many times it's just, you know, you get these three evaluation periods in July. I mean, there's not a lot of interaction. There's not a lot of understanding. And again, I think that's one of the reasons why you have so many transfers, because not only from the coaching side, but the player side, they don't know who they're going to play for. And if you don't know who you're going to play for, that's not easy.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. I know we really didn't get to touch a whole lot on your international career, but maybe just a few kind of quick questions regarding that and just kind of the overall life experience. But obviously you were over there playing in the top leagues in Spain, Italy, France, and I know the atmosphere over there is pretty crazy and unique, but kind of off the top of your head, one area or maybe one team or gym that you just thought had either the best atmosphere or the craziest atmosphere when you would go play there?
On the top is Greece, anywhere in Greece. Greeks are great fans. They're crazy. And as an opposing team going in there, it's tough. It's real tough. And that was probably the toughest place to go play. You know, in Italy, it's really intense. The fans are, you got to remember, it's like, it's each area has their own territory. And when you play, it's almost like you're not only playing for yourself, you're playing for the whole town. And so when that's the case, it can get wild, man. It can get wild. Some of those gyms in Italy are crazy. I can remember playing when I was playing in Cantu. We go to Milano, and it's like almost like a Duke, North Carolina. It's pretty close. And then there's also Varese. Three teams with a lot of history in the basketball realm of Italy. And I can remember going there, and it was crazy. And then the following year, I signed to go to Milan, and we went back to play in Cantu. And it was crazier. I mean, it was unbelievable, the fans. And it makes for, you know, a great environment, a great time, a great thing. I mean, anytime you have the passion that you have as players, and then when you can go somewhere where the passion is so great with the fans, it's second to none. I mean, you know, here in the States, it's fun to play, but when you look at the NBA, it's more of a show.
Right.
But when you're in Europe and you're playing, it's not a show. It's a battle. And the fans, I mean, they've got to have separate sections. Like, if you're a fan of Milan, you're not going to sit next to a fan of Cantu and wear the Cantu shirt and the Milan shirt, because you're going to get beat up. You're going to get hurt. And I'm not joking. You're going to get hurt. They have to have separate sections where fans from the other team enter in a separate section. There's only one way into the stadium, one way out of the stadium. And they can't interact with each other because they have big glass partitions up, or plexiglass, so you can't cross over and go into the other section. It's a different world. It's soccer is the same way. Just on a bigger stage, obviously. The stadiums are bigger.
Right.
But the passion and stuff that those people have for their teams is phenomenal.
I personally, I loved it. I absolutely love playing it.
What I guess where was you played for a lot of different teams. What was kind of your favorite team that you played for overseas?
My favorite was probably just in Milano. I played for a couple years there, 3 years, and really established myself in the Italian league. And I was playing for the national team at that time, so it was fun. My owner was Giorgio Armani, so it was kind of the best of both worlds, playing and then living in a really nice city in Milan and getting to know the people that I got to know and all those things. So it was fun. But when I look back, I was in Cantu. The passion that the Cantu fans have are great. And that year was a phenomenal year for us as a team. I played in Dijon in France, where it was an awesome experience. Some of the other places I played in Italy, Trieste was phenomenal. Trieste at that time had one of the nicest gyms, and it would be packed every game. And, the crowd crazy and chanting and so, you know, there's so many great experiences. It's hard to really say this place was the best or this place was the best, because there's so many guys, so many places that are so much fun to play, so much fun to be around the fans, so much fun, the atmosphere.
Well, I'm sure you got to experience a lot of different cultures, but if you were going back and you had to choose, you know, I'm sure the food and the wine and everything was fantastic, but if you were going to one, you know, one city, for a meal, you know, for some food and drink, where would you want to go to?
Well, again, it I don't know, man, because, you know, I might go to Milan because I know enough people there. I know so many guys there, and the meal would be great just because of the company, and the food is outstanding. I might go down south to Napoli area where the food is phenomenal. The pizza is incredible. It depends. It really depends. But to be honest with you, I would try to make it a trip where I'd go 10, 12 days so I could go to each place and do it.
Fair enough, and I guess that's how you gotta do it. Well, I want to kind of wrap this up with one kind of hypothetical question. So obviously, your freshman year, you won a championship at UNC. This past season, 2017, UNC and Roy Williams won a championship against Gonzaga. This year's team, you know, was heavily dependent on kind of the upperclassmen, which, you know, I guess is kind of a rarity now in the one and done era, but you know, if you were matching up the two teams playing against each other, who's coming out on top?
I'm a biased guy in that circumstance. I'm going to say that the 93 team would do it, but I'm also going to add into that that it's a different era of basketball. And so the way that we played a lot more physical. The referees at that time, the rules were different. And you could play a lot more physical than they do now. So it's hard to compare those teams. But I will say this. There are teams at Carolina that were really, really talented throughout the years. This year was also one of those teams. But there is not many, if any, teams that played on the defensive side of the ball like the 93 team played. And so I think that that's what sets us apart a little bit. We didn't have the superstars. We didn't have, you know, guys that were all world or this and that. We just had a group of guys that busted their butt. And on the defensive side of the ball especially, I mean, we were able to take you out of what you were doing and make you do something different. And a lot of times that different thing turned into a turnover, a missed shot. And that was our strength, and that's what we hung our hat on. And I don't think that any team, whether it be this 2017 team from Chapel Hill that won the championship or other teams, it would be difficult for them to be able to play against us in that sense of how good of a defensive team we were.
Okay. All right. Well,
again, I have to add, I'm very biased. Again, I'm very biased. You know,
right,
take it
right.
For what it is.
last thing to touch on, you know, you talked about the reunion of the championship team and the Carolina family. You know, how does that still kind of play a part in your life now that you're in the coaching, you know, the coaching field, of just kind of, you know, obviously having that big tree. But how does, you know, in terms of what the Carolina family means to you now and kind of your involvement now that you're coaching?
It really doesn't change much. The only thing that changes is the fact that I'm coaching, and so now a lot of the conversations that you have aren't just like, hey, how's everything going? What's this? What's that? You know, from as a player now, but now as a coach, it's like, oh, yeah, did you see so-and-so? What about so-and-so? Well, there might be this kid here. You know, what'd you think of this guy? What offense? Do you remember what coach did here? And so the conversation changes a little bit, but it's not that much different.
Well, Dante, I really appreciate your time. You know, you've had quite the journey from, you know, playing with all these, you know, great coaches and great teammates, whether it's high school or Chapel Hill or overseas. So definitely appreciate you kind of sharing a lot of your thoughts and memories with that. I know, you know, coaching-wise, you started off with a victory this week. So you're 1-0 kind of going into the season, but definitely good luck. Good luck this year, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you, man. I enjoyed it, and, you know, look forward to maybe another time to do it again.